South Asian herself, interested in elucidating risk factors for this growing population. And I think Nita's presentation and Dr. Mehta's are, you know, just very complementary in looking at this population and some of the benefits and also the limitations of the CHIS data set. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your kind introduction, and also to the API Caucus for inviting me to speak here today. I'm actually presenting today on behalf of Priya Kamat, who's the first author of this abstract. She is a student who works with me and was particularly interested in the South Asian population. And first authored the manuscript. We also have a host of authors on our team who have done a large range of studies in South Asian research. So you might think that perhaps this is in stereo or just a flashback to the last presentation. South Asians have ethnic roots in India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, Sri Lanka, Nepal, and Bhutan. This is a pictorial map from the United Nations. From the U.S. Census summary files, we see that it's one of the fastest growing groups of Asians in the U.S. from 1990 to the year 2000, with a 106% increase in population. South Asians are also the fastest growing Asian group in California. This is a detailed map of the United States that shows the per population of South Asians, with the darker red indicating more South Asian concentration. You'll notice that the South Asian concentrations are on both sides of the country, so on both coasts and less in the middle. So what can we say to summarize what's going on in terms of South Asian research in the U.S.? And perhaps some of the people in the audience could also inform this discussion. There's a predominance of research right now on cardiac and vascular risk factors and health outcomes for the South Asian population. This is of particular interest because South Asians have been shown to have higher rates of cardiovascular outcomes and risk factors in California and internationally. But less is known about other risk conditions or other risk factors for this group. And what studies are there are often limited by volunteer or purposive samples or in specific metropolitan areas and not for populations as a whole. So we undertook to ask the question, what is the general self-rating of health? So using the question, how would you rate your health for South Asians residing in California? And we asked whether it differs from non-Hispanic whites, and what are potential mediators of the differences, if any, are found. We utilized the California Health Interview Survey, as you've heard from all the wonderful presentations today. As you know already, it's a biannual random digit dial telephone survey of households drawn from every county in California. And it's representative of the state's non-institutionalized population living in households with telephones. And what we did that was slightly different from the other presentations that we've heard about today is that we pooled data across four waves of the CHIS data. And let me tell you a little bit more about how we did that in case that might be of interest to some of the people here in the audience. So what we did was we took the four CHIS administrations from 2001, 2003, 2005, and 2007, and we extracted out the South Asians for each of those waves. And we also extracted out the non-Hispanic whites. There were 381 South Asians in the 2001 CHIS sample as part of the random digit dial survey. We only took them. We didn't take the oversampling. We similarly did that for 2003, 2005, 2007, for a total sample of 1645 South Asians. And CHIS methodologists, including Dr. Lee, who spoke earlier today, have come up with an example of how to combine 2 years of data, so 2 years or two CHIS administration. And we used that methodology and expanded it under their advisement and under their leadership to 4 years. And the way that we did that is for each of the samples, so for the 2001, the 2003, the 2005, and the 2007, we took the data that's used to weight the samples to the population level, and we combined them in order to create weights that that basically weight across all 4 years. And if anybody's interested in the methodology for this, you could get more details at the CHIS website, and specifically the PDF that is listed here below. And if you're interested, you're welcome to talk to me also after the talk. So what we found when we pooled all 4 years of data together is that that there was a difference in the self-rated health of South Asian and white adult participants for the California Health Interview Survey, showing that South Asians, by and large, rated their health better on average than non-Hispanic whites. So we undertook to try to understand, and I'm actually really happy that Dr. Chawla spoke earlier today about the fact that the health status was actually similar between the CHIS sample and the sample in the community, because that's actually reassuring to our work where we only pooled the CHIS data. So we undertook to explain what explains the South Asian and non-Hispanic white difference. Could it be demographics such as age, gender, or marital status, perhaps income? Or could it be level of their chronic conditions? Could it be their health habits, their access to care, or immigrant factors that might help explain these differences? And this slide depicts a set of models that we created to look at the determinants of self-rated health for South Asians versus whites. And the term that we're focusing in on, even though each of these columns represents a model with many terms in it, we're just going to focus on the one factor that compares South Asians to whites as the reference group. And we found that after controlling for demographics, South Asians were 30% more likely to report their health as positive. And then we controlled for things like their health habits. And that actually, we thought that controlling for health habits, things like smoking and drinking and their exercise would reduce the effect between, but it actually made it stronger. So it went up. And then we adjusted for chronic health conditions, things like diabetes, high blood pressure, heart disease, and asthma, and we saw it come back down to where it was before. Then we looked at access to care, and what we found actually was that the South Asians in the sample had a slightly better access to care than the whites, the non-Hispanics whites as a whole, and so that attenuated the effect to some extent. Then we looked at women only, their disease preventive behaviors, things like whether the women engaged in a screening mammography or a pap test. And that actually mediated the effect almost entirely. So engaging in these health preventive behaviors what seemed to mediate their health status to some extent. The other thing that mediated health status was their immigrant status, so how many years they lived in the country. And I'm going to focus on those last two mediators in a little bit more detail. So what we found was that the years lived in the U.S. had an inverse relationship with positive self-rated health. And so looking at the top bar, living in the U.S. for 15 years or more, you looked virtually like the non-Hispanic whites in the sample. But as you became new immigrants, actually, you were much more likely to have positive self-rating health. So it's really kind of interesting, because when you do the literature, you look at the literature more broadly, not just focusing on South Asians, other ethnic groups like Latinos and African Americans Latinos and other Asian groups, actually, when they first arrive in the United States, rate their health often less positively than non-Hispanic whites. And as they live in the country longer, they actually then become, you know, they start to rate their health more positively. And this is actually the opposite. So for South Asians, we find in this sample that when they first get to the country, they rate their health positively. And as they live here longer, they actually start to rate their health more poorly. We also found that for women, engaging in they engaged in less preventive behavior even if they rated their health positively. So this is actually looking at the women who rated their health positively actually have very low rates of pap smear tests and mammograms. So what that's saying, and that was particularly found for the new immigrant women. And so what that's saying is that this health message is not uniform. For women who first immigrate to the United States, who happen to be of South Asian origin, they may rate their health positively, but then they may not engage in the kinds of behaviors that are going to keep their health positive as they stay in the country longer. So maybe they're not, you know, this could be for a panoply of reasons. They may not have a cultural background which supports engaging in preventative health care when they feel healthy. You know, they feel and they say that they're healthy. So in summary, what we've been able to do here is that we've constructed the largest population-based study of South Asians in the U.S. using the CHIST data, and we found that overall South Asians had more positive self-ratings of health compared to non-Hispanic whites, that the findings were not uniform, that there was an inverse relationship between years lived in the U.S. and positive self-rated health, and that women who had positive self-rated health had, interestingly, had low preventive health behaviors. And I wanted to send an invitation or also just talk a little bit about the kind of work that's being done at UCSF and in the Northern California area regarding South Asians. So more broadly, there's the South Asian Public Health Association, and there are some representatives of that organization here in the room. There's the MASALA study, which is a prospective cohort study of 150 Indian Americans in the Bay Area, looking at cardiovascular risk factors. There's also the Pan-Asian cohort study, which is led by Dr. Palani Appian at the Palo Alto Medical Foundation, which is going to take over 10,000 Asians from South Asia and pool their health data over time. And there's also the South Asian Heart Center, which is in at El Camino Hospital in Mountain View. So there's a budding surge of health data that's going to become available for South Asians, and I just wanted to pay homage to that and say, look how exciting this is, that this is going to happen. I wanted to acknowledge my grant support, and since I'm the last speaker, I wanted to also acknowledge very carefully the various funders of CHIS, to whom we are very thankful for having this great data. I will hand the floor back to Dr. Kagawa Singer. Thank you.
Thank you. If all the speakers would now come up to the panel, then we can take questions. And thank you all for, as a moderator, I really appreciate you all staying on time so that there's time for the audience to ask you questions and get some discussion going amongst the people here. My hope is that we'll be able to get rid of every speaker's bar when they have Asians as an aggregate group.
Yeah. And your papers that will emanate from your studies will hopefully make that evidence very clear that we have to. There's no option. So questions from the audience?
about your China study. I'm about to start studying in the very same area. Could you give some observations and about different methods of data collection that you use? I realize that you have 69% of the data.
I think that the methods of the data collection really were related to the approach, which was the community-based participatory research approach that was taken. So basically what was done for the SANA survey was a number of interviewers from the South Asian Network, which is a group that we partnered with, were trained by them and then trained by UCLA, but they're all community members. So basically they went to different settings where we expected to find South Asians, and especially lower income, less educated, and less English-speaking South Asians. So a lot of times it was done in person because that's what was the most feasible thing to do. People were in a setting like a mosque or a temple, or if they're at a health fair, there's an in-person opportunity to get the interview done there. So that's why I think a large portion of it was done in person, because people felt that if they tried to contact people later that they wouldn't respond. They felt that they had tried. They did do some telephone interviews based on, they had the SAN client database, so they used that as part of the group that they called by telephone. But I think they just chose what was the most feasible way to collect the data, which tended to be in person just because of the way the recruitment was going. Also because they went to different residences, they were going to people's houses, so the in-person made the most sense in that recruitment effort.
And were they very receptive?
I think that made a big difference. I think that, and so if you'd like to speak to that, you can. But I do think that the in-person made, I think that's what actually allowed them to capture the lower income, less English proficient, because I think there's a lot of concerns about participation in a probability sample or a population-based sample where particularly people who are recent immigrants may fear that something will happen as a result of that. They may not want to share information, personal information about themselves. I think that that method allowed them to capture the diverse sample that they got.
That's what I thought. That's why I have a problem.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Nadia?